Oh, it's real time.
Blah, blah, blah. Whatever.
Let me turn off the monitor.
Oh, no, it's real time.
No, I'm not getting any latency through the computer.
Oh.
So output through my headset and go.
Test, test, test. It's either real time or the latency is so low, it's barely behind real time.
Yep, I think we're ready to go.
I've got all three mics coming in. Good.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 7th of September, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And we have Alex Vanderweel, who has no microphone. Who took your mic? Oh, too bad then. Okay.
Chris and I are borrowing it.
And this is our fully podcast only version of Soundbites this week. As I'm sure you know, the Buffalo Bills are back on Wham. That's very exciting. But they are doing they have a 1 o'clock game today, and that means that starting at 10:30 this morning, they were going in and doing the pre-show and all of that stuff. The mighty, mighty John DiTullio is in doing the pre-show.
No, it's John DiTullio. Show. You gotta do the voice right.
Yeah, right. And he's in there doing that, and so we're in a different studio. Alex is manning or personing or individualing the board, and we're ready to go. So we'll start with, we will not, of course, be able to take live calls, but we have stuff on the website, and we have news that I've printed out. So we're going to be doing the whole standard thing, and I'm going to start with news. This also has to do, of course, with the poll. Google has released the beta version of a new browser, Chrome. In its comic book pre-announcement, Google stated correctly that watching videos, chatting, and even playing web-based games didn't exist when browsers were first invented. For the user, Google wants the browser to disappear and to focus on the applications and pages users are viewing rather than on the border with its tools and such. Google has rethought the internet browser. Some of its basic underpinnings are quite novel, but users will recognize some features as they exist in other open source browsers on the market today. At the moment, only the Windows version of Chrome is available for download. Plans call for macOS 10 and Linux versions in the near future. That said, Google has released Chrome in 43 languages and in 122 countries. Chrome is based on the open source project WebKit, the same rendering engine used by Apple's Safari. If a page renders in Safari, it will render in Chrome. WebKit is also the basis for Android, Google's mobile platform. So it seems that Google is planning to use Chrome in mobile environments. Google's hope, of course, is that Chrome's much faster performance will open up the bottleneck that chokes the speed and abilities of today's web-based applications. In short, Chrome is more of a long-term competitive threat to Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office than it is to Internet Explorer. That may sound a little grand, but the evidence is on display in Google's own lobby where the search company's computer kiosks present a browser only. No start menu, no desktop shortcuts, no operating system. Google, of course, benefits materially from fast performance. When it comes to search, Google has discovered when its search page loads fractionally faster, users search more often, which, of course, leads to more opportunities for Google to place its highly lucrative text ads. Second, a faster web applications foundation means that Google's online applications for email, word processing, spreadsheet, and calendars can become faster and fuller featured. Chrome is only at beta point 2. When it's a little more mature, it will not be outside the realm of possibility that Google is looking at a system that boots into a browser and runs Google's applications quickly, easily, and without hesitations. You know, we're already seeing netbooks.
Yep.
The little 8-inch or 10-inch
ultra mobile PC, UMPC.
Yeah, yeah.
Smaller, lighter, faster.
They're calling them netbooks now. I don't know who coined that phrase. They should probably be shot, but
the iPod Touch. Yeah.
The iPod Touch is not a netbook.
It's an internet appliance.
It's not a netbook. It has no keyboard.
It has a soft keyboard.
It's very soft. It's actually very hard.
Yeah, it's a hard keyboard
and
that's
no
softly
tactile
created.
Response. But at any rate, the idea behind these netbooks is that you can take them anywhere. They're going to cost a there's some company that's been promising a $100 laptop. Not the one laptop per child, but another company entirely has been promising a $100 laptop. They seem to have missed the mark. It's currently $129. And it's going to be sold in, I think, next month it's coming here. It's from some overseas company, Korean or Japanese.
Well, I'm not going to complain with $129, but when flash drive comes down a little bit more, it'll make $99.
Well, that's the point. That's what they're saying. Economies of scale will bring it down within a year to $99.
Sure.
And at that point, if you can boot into Chrome, they already have, I forget what they call it, fast boot or something. You mm-hmm. open up your laptop, and instead of starting the operating system, you can start just a browser and a music player. And once that browser could become Chrome, you don't need the rest of the operating system.
Well, once they also do away with, you know, the conventional hard drives and go to flash memory, I mean, things are just going to run that much faster. And I think you're going to see that with, you know, the flash drives coming out bigger and bigger and bigger each time we turn around and going to that instead of the platters moving and everything right. else. Well, less failures, less heat, and faster and more efficient system.
Right. But there's still a huge capacity difference. The largest single 3.5-inch Winchester spinning hard drive is 1,500 gigabytes, 1.5 terabytes. The largest flash drive currently shipping is 120 gigabytes.
But still,
on the other hand,
there are a lot of people that don't need that much.
Yeah. Right. Unless you're doing video or audio, you don't need that. And for most people, the amount of storage they get on Google Apps is more than enough.
Right. What's interesting is how you define video and audio these days. My 500 gig drive at home is full. And,
so, and I know what kind of video and audio
well,
you
do. I was looking through it. No, it's I've got 300 gigs of podcasts. Things that I download and listen to in audio and video format. So it's not just audio and video that you create yourself. It's stuff you download from the internet that's
right,
getting really, really big.
Well, right. But what Google is saying is if you were to buy one of their machines, you open it up and within 2 seconds you're at your browser. And you can mm-hmm. do Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets and Google Calendar and Facebook and YouTube and all that other stuff.
It's going to be
for most people, you don't need a lot of internal storage. And if you want internal storage, it'll have an SD card slot. You can put a 16 gig SD card or not a 16, you know, whatever they are. They get up to 16 gig now. And you can have 50 of those sitting around. So you can have your music and your videos and your audio and whatever you want on those and take them with you. The best part of that is now that the TSA is saying, that they can confiscate any laptop you've got just because they want to,
mm-hmm.
you bring a $100 laptop with you.
No
big all
law,
your
right.
data are either in your bag or online somewhere. They take your $100 laptop, you've lost nothing but $100.
Well, I think you're going to see more folks going with that type of system going to the more of the online stuff, taking advantage of that. Because there's so many services that will allow you to, you know, store your stuff up there. They're offering, you know, 10 and 20 gig a storage space that, you know, if you want to put some important stuff with you, like you say, you wouldn't have to carry those flash drives and everything else with you. You would just connect to any internet service, boom, go over to Google Storage, and it's there.
Right. Google Mail gives you gigabytes of storage. Google Docs gives you gigabytes of storage.
It becomes a non-issue.
YouTube has no limit to the amount of storage you can have. You get storage with your internet service provider. You get storage. Everybody gives you dang storage
I mean,
nowadays.
You can just get it
.Mac account gives you storage. So you don't need a lot of actual storage on your machine.
Just the applications.
Except for the fact that we have been brainwashed into thinking we have to keep our apps local. You know, I have a whole directory on my hard drive at work with ISOs of various Linux distributions. That's actually the stupidest thing I could possibly say.
If we get ubiquitous, super high-speed wireless internet everywhere, we won't need local storage, because that's everything on my computer, stuff I've downloaded at some point to listen to off the internet. If I had internet everywhere, I wouldn't need to download it.
On the other hand, you can download it right to your iPod. Get a 60-gig iPod, and you've got all your podcasts in the iPod. You've got all your videos wherever you want them, whatever you're doing. And then the theory is, except for you, most people actually listen to the podcasts they download. And so then they could erase them and put in a new one.
Well, the problem is I download 200 or 300 hours a day, and I can only listen for...
you're not...
I've always thought this.
You're not typical.
Well, another point of view on this whole computer system is that much like we have said about the MacBook Air, it's probably not anybody's only computer.
Right.
This is a great thing to carry around with your real computer with the real amount of storage back at home.
Right, right. For $100, who wouldn't get one, you know? When you go, right, you go on a trip or whatever, whatever, instead of taking your $3,000 MacBook, you take a $100 thing, and if it gets $3,000 to $100, you know, if it gets lost or it gets stolen or whatever, it gets banged
no
around.
No big deal.
It's $100.
Yeah.
You know, big deal. And nothing has been lost because everything is online. So anyway, that's our poll of the week. The poll is a pretty simple one. The title is Chrome. And the choices are love it, like it, it's just another browser, and can't try it yet. So take the poll and see what's going on and join us and ask Nick and join us on the poll and everything. Were you actually ready for me? You were? All right, then once you're done with the poll, I didn't realize you could do that in this studio. Oh, no, you can't. All right, that's what I thought.
I could add it in post.
And we currently have 58 votes in the poll.
Yes, we do.
And did you get your internet working over there yet?
Yes, I do. We're in our old studio. For those of you who care about these things, we're actually in our old studio. There's no wired internet in here as there is other places. And there's no wireless in here. So Steve has got the one wire running from outside the room, which
really,
we probably shouldn't tell anybody. And then he's sharing his internet connection so that I can have internet connection. Alex, you had...
She's ready.
Oh, you ready? All right. So once you've done taking the poll, then on the little yellow box underneath, you can see, give us your opinion. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ding.
So professional.
We love us some Alex. We really do.
You could be a singer, Alex.
Where you can... where
she's
you can
cuter than Rob.
Well, she's cute. In and of herself, cuter than Rob, it takes in a huge, huge range.
That's true.
Okay.
But I wasn't going to go there.
No. Feminine, definitely more attractive, infinitely. Version of Rob, we prefer not to think so. Except that you do sit behind the controls and manage and try to run herd on us.
Let's put it this way. You make all of us wish we were younger, Alex.
In my case, 40 years younger, but that's another story entirely. All right, go ahead. We have a question from
matter of fact, and this is one thing I'd like to remind folks as you listen to this webcast, is if you have questions off of our website, you can send them in there. We're going to start printing them off. So during these 11 weeks that we're not on the air, our regular show, we will be taking your questions and answering them here. And I have Len Carpenter from Hamlin, New York. And his question is, Windows wallpaper in control panel display properties is gone. I think I had a virus. Very good thought. You're right. You win the great prize. You two get to clean out. Most likely it's the XP Antivirus 2008 and 2009.
The fake antivirus programs that are named XP Antivirus.
Yeah. Right. And one thing that I should recommend to folks is there's a great program out there called Malware Bytes.
Malware, probably.
Malware. Thank you. I keep calling it malware because that's all it does is
Things at the mall.
Yeah, mauls you, yeah.
Yeah, it just mauls the hell out of a machine. And, I mean, it literally just does stupid stuff. And I was telling Nick a little earlier, we found this XP Antivirus 2009 right now. What it'll do is as you're running that mall remover, it will throw up some screens. One looks like a blue screen that your system has done a screen dump. That if you've ever had anything crash and you'll get the blue screen and the white writing, it is a screensaver. This virus is so clever, it throws up either a blue screen that makes you think your system crashed and you got to reboot so you never get rid of it, or it'll throw up that Windows splash screen where it says Windows XP, and you see that little bar along the bottom that normally floats. It's stuck. So again, you're thinking, oh, my machine locked up, I got to restart. All you have to do is either hit the space bar or the enter key a couple of times to get the system's attention. It will get rid of that screensaver, because that's what it is, a screensaver. It'll go back to the program, removing all this junk, let it do its thing, reboot, and I, again, recommend doing this in safe mode. Run this program in safe mode so less is being loaded. So, yeah, Len, short answer is yes, you have a virus, and like I say, that malware bytes is the best one to get rid of it. It does a great job. And the other program, again, I can't stress enough, is, and it was all due to one of our listeners, is the Revo. I'm liking Revo a lot more than the old ad remove programs. Only from the standpoint, when you go into ad remove programs, it never really gets rid of all the junk. There's always stuff still in the registry. If you use Revo to get rid of programs, you don't need a reg cleaner. Because Revo literally gets rid of the program, uninstalls it, it will then get rid of all the entries in the registry and all the entries that, you know, that usually leaves empty folders or partially empty folders. It will get rid of that also.
Good. Also, one more news item that we have to read. Microsoft said it will ship 4 security updates next week, only a third as many as it did last month, to fix critical vulnerabilities in Windows Office, Windows Media Player, and other parts of its software portfolio. But just because September sports only 4, down from almost a dozen in August, that doesn't necessarily mean patching will be a breeze. It's not going to be an easy month. Well, with all these different applications and different operating systems affected, patching will be a lot more involved than you'd think with just 4. Bulletins. In the advance notification Microsoft published on Thursday, it tagged all 4 of the expected updates as critical, its highest threat rating, all 4 of them. As customary, Microsoft limited the information in naming the affected software and providing only generalities about the bugs. However, all 4 will patch one or more remote execution vulnerabilities, flaws that allow attackers to gain control of a system by introducing malicious code, often by convincing users to open a file attachment or tricking them into visiting a rogue website. The one bulletin labeled Windows actually affects more than the operating system. It also affects Internet Explorer, .NET Framework, Office, SQL Server, and Visual Studio. The kitchen sink approach to the bulletin caught many security specialists off guard. 2 bulletins will patch bugs in Windows Media Tools. One appears to be the Windows Media Player 11 update that Microsoft originally scheduled for last month but yanked at the last minute. The second media-related update will patch an unspecified bug in Windows Media Encoder, which is a free Microsoft tool for converting audio and video to the Windows Media formats. Yeah, that's something we all want to do. Or capturing live content. The fourth bulletin will detail fixes in Office XP, Office 2003, and Office 2007 on Windows. Office 2007 was the first for Microsoft to use XML file formats as the default, and it has proved to be more secure than older versions of that application suite. Microsoft will also issue several non-security updates on Tuesday, including another in a series of reliability updates for Windows Vista, as well as that's a long line. Reliability updates for Vista, as well as a fix for a problem with Windows Server 2008's Hyper-V Volume Shadow Copy Service, a tool that backs up virtual machines. The security updates and other fixes will be posted at approximately 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 9th of September. So it is Black Tuesday. Microsoft's monthly visitor is returning, and you will definitely want to make sure you pay attention to that and update your machine soon, if not shortly, because these security fixes, once they're available, the first thing that happens is all the bad guys tear them apart. Yep. So that they can update their malware.
Patch Tuesday is closely followed by Exploit Thursday when all the exploits come out.
Yep.
The other thing that was kind of interesting this month is that Microsoft was shipping updates through the month. They weren't waiting until Patch Tuesday. So that's another reason why there's only 4 on Patch Tuesday. But that means there were some really, really, really bad ones to come out ahead of schedule.
Mm-hmm. There's a shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to point out, folks, so going back to that other question we had about the tabs disappearing, one other thing I should put out there, that once you run the other malware to get rid of all that junk and the super anti-spyware and that, your tabs still might not be there. One trick, and I'm going to pass this along because, you know, it might be a little helpful, is if you're running Internet Explorer 7.0, what you might have to do is uninstall it, reboot, and reinstall it. And then that way, those tabs, so when you go into the control panel and hit display, all those tabs will show up. Because it just tries to hide stuff so you can't change the screens and everything else. And it also messes up Internet Explorer. And in that, if you had the blue E out on your desktop, and this is why I don't like using Internet Explorer, that blue E, if you click on it, all it does is put another copy out on your desktop. You click it again, puts another icon out on your desktop. It never opens it, but it sure will fill your screen up with a lot of blue E's on it. So, again, if you run into that scenario, uninstall Internet Explorer, reboot your machine, reinstall it, and that will correct the issue.
I am so spoiled by Linux. I am so spoiled by Linux. Even on my Mac,
I use Firefox, and, you know, that thing, I love 3. Because of all the tabs, and I'm not getting this crap.
I only ever need to reboot when I update the OS itself, and that's fair. even on the Mac, it doesn't update third-party programs. The only third-party program I actually run on my Linux machine is Second Life, because that isn't part of the distribution yet. But everything else I've got, 30,000 programs, are all built in, and any one of them that I update, I don't have to reboot. It's I just get spoiled.
I think I have two, in that I stay away from IE. My machine is on 24/7, and I use nothing but Firefox and Thunderbird. And very seldom do I have to reboot my machine, other than, like you say, oh, I get an update for a program, and it recommends a couple of my other programs, and it suggests that I reboot. Okay, I'll do that. But that is so far and few between times, it just sits there, and it runs.
Right.
And like I say, it just proves the point, like you've been saying right along, by avoiding the IE and Outlook Express that we've been, you know, saying year after year now.
Your machine becomes much safer.
Oh, yep.
Dave, I'm with you. The Firefox 3 is so good that since it came out, I have not used Safari on my Mac.
Right.
There's just no need.
One thing that
wait till you get Chrome.
I can't wait till it's available for
It's just so cool.
One thing I found with Firefox, that just again, some of their add-ins. The add-ins are really cool. You know how you can open a bunch of tabs? They now have color-coded tabs.
Oh, yeah. That's been around for a while. That's nice.
I put those on, and you can change the different colors. And then if you know your color schemes, you can plug in the colors that you want and create different tabs. So I've got some for applications, other for informational, that when I open up, I know the colors and what they are grouped as. And it's just a lot of fun. And like I say, the different features that they've added on, that you don't get that in Internet Explorer.
Right.
The add-ons.
Right. There's a website, dromaeo.com, D-R-O-M-A-E-O, I believe it is. I should probably look that up, shouldn't I? D-R-O-M-A-E-O.
Well, right now, Chrome, though, correct me if I'm wrong.
Java performance testing?
Yeah, it's astonishing. What happens with this thing is it loads a dozen, 8 or 10 or 12, whatever the number is, JavaScript tests. You hit the button, it runs them all. Chrome ran the entire suite in under 300 milliseconds. Firefox took 6,000 milliseconds. It's all on the same XP machine. Well, Vista machine, actually. And Internet Explorer gave up after the first test. It took 20 minutes to give up, but it only completed one test. And then it actually brought up a window that said, we're running slow. You want to stop doing this? Yeah, I think I do.
Chrome, right now, is in beta, correct?
It's beta 0.2.
All right, so
on the other hand, every single thing Google has ever done is still in beta.
Beta doesn't mean now what it used to mean.
Not to Google, it doesn't. Google Mail is still in beta.
It's an interesting point. If they leave it in beta, then you're not surprised when it crashes.
Right.
So if it ever crashes, it's just a beta.
Well, that's why I'm wondering whether we should tell folks right now that
I would never use it as my main browser. Not ever. Not yet.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean.
I think that there are like a billion people who downloaded it. It's already at almost 4% of all internet usages in Chrome.
Now, it's based on WebKit, right? Which is the same core engine of Safari, so it's going to be similar to Safari.
Right. Right, in terms of a lot of things. However, they rewrote most of it from the ground up. One of the problems that Google has always had is that most of their web-based stuff uses JavaScript. And JavaScript has really very poor performance, particularly under Internet Explorer, but even under Safari. So what they've done is they took the basic WebKit for rendering and then rewrote everything else so that the particularly the JavaScript, all runs, every JavaScript device runs in its own little sandbox. So if you have two on a page and one is screwed up, it doesn't stop the other one from running, and you can kill the first one very easily. So they've really done some nice things. And of course, the whole point behind that is so that their apps will run faster. So you will want to run their apps more.
And it's optimized for media, which is what their apps are generally using.
Right. Okay, we have another question.
Yeah, there's one for the Mac side. Steve can handle that.
Oh, sorry.
Are we interrupting something?
Yes.
He said one of his other sites.
No. I'm going through the forums looking for some questions as well.
We had some in there that we should.
Yeah, that's it. That's the story.
That's the story we're sticking to.
Good story.
Yes. Todd from Fairport is asking about iTunes and his iPod Touch. And one of the new programs that's available for the iPod Touch and the iPhone is from Apple called Remote
sometimes their names are just too simple.
Right. Word.
Yeah. You kind of know what that means for Microsoft. So Apple Remote, not to be confused with the physical Apple Remote that comes with some computers, is a software program for your iPhone or iPod Touch. And what it's supposed to let you do is control your iTunes from your iPod.
Sure.
So if you're not sitting in front of your computer, you can control your iTunes with your iPod, because obviously your iPod's in your hand all the time.
Sure.
And that lets you is supposed to let you control your iTunes, control the songs and the volume, you know, picking next song, and also control, excuse me, the AirTunes feature of the Airport Express, which allows you to play music remotely on remote speakers. One of Apple's wireless base stations has a speaker connector on it. So you can plug this base station in other rooms in your house and from your one computer or any computer on your network, stream music to any set of speakers in your house. And some people are having trouble with the remote program, and it's being a little hard to control. And in Todd's specific case, he has a Belkin Wireless G router and an Airport Express, a network router that is creating the AirTunes for his wireless speakers. And that's likely his problem. Two routers may be confusing the network. There are ways to extend your network called WDS that let two routers work together. And he may have to reconfigure his Belkin router to see the airport router as an extension and not have two separate routers or two separate networks created. And Apple has a knowledge base article on troubleshooting the Apple remote and how to get it up and working right. And that's article HT1947. We'll put that link in the show notes. I haven't had a chance yet to try the remote feature of the iPod Touch. We keep selling all our iPod Touches before I get a chance to play with them.
Thanks to you. This thing works over the wireless, not by infrared.
Right. It's over Wi-Fi, which makes it better than the infrared remote that you get with your Mac. So with the little tiny Apple remote control for doing the same stuff, but you have to point it at your Mac. It's infrared, line of sight, so you have to be in the same room. With the Apple iPod remote program, you can be in a different room, say with your wireless speakers, and your computer's in a completely different room. As long as you're on the network, you can then tell the iTunes to play a different song.
I remember looking at that little remote thing when I opened my MacBook Pro and thinking, Apple has given me a way to turn a $3,000 laptop into a $200 digital audio player. Excellent.
Or specifically, it's a slideshow. Well, it's a slideshow control. So when you're giving your slideshow, you know, your presentations, you can be talking up in front of the screen and the button will advance the
slides. That is exactly what I have used it for. Yes. Yes. I just needed to see your reaction when I said that.
Oh, one thing I'd like to bring up is a new toy that I was playing with, and that's called a Buffalo Drive. We've talked about them before, and basically what it is for you folks...
What is it again?
It's called a Buffalo Drive.
Okay.
Well, it's a company, but it's a network drive. I've got a 350 gig hard drive in this thing, and all we did was plug it into our network... Gets the IP address automatically.
You turn it on.
Yeah, turn it on.
See, it's two steps. See?
Yeah. Oh. Excuse me. But we turn it on, and once it's connected, got its IP address. We installed the software on one of the machines because we can control it there.
Right.
And there's a 300 gig hard drive just hanging off the network. I'm recommending this for a lot of folks that are backing it, like we've said in a long time. You know, it's the data that's the key thing. Programs, that's when a system crashes, that's just Microsoft's way of telling you it's time to clean out your machine and reload anyways.
Right.
But as long as you got your data and email and all those things backed up, you're good to go. So we've got these Buffalo drives now set up to, the person just turns it on, and before they go at night, we've got a routine on the server that now copies that whole folder that all their documentation is from there over to the hard drive. In the morning they come in, shut the drive off. Now they got an additional backup of all their documentations. So worst case scenario, if their server goes down, all I have to do is plug that in and then share that. Because right now I don't have it shared. I just got it hooked up to this one machine that can see it. And boom, it's good to go. Nobody else knows it's there, but in a crisis, I can have them at least back up and running and getting at some of their critical files. And I think that is so slick, as opposed to just the USB drives. These are a little bit more, not much, for the size you can get.
It's
right.
A general class of drives called an NAS, or network attached storage, a hard drive with an Ethernet port on it, basically.
Yeah, basically. And I have one of those I got from you, and I love it.
Several wireless router companies, Apple has two routers that have a USB port on it, so you plug a standard hard drive into your wireless router, which is already on your network, and it shares that drive to the network. In fact, Apple even makes one called the Time Capsule that has a, it's a wireless router, it's a wired router, it's a print server, and it's a hard drive server, and has an internal hard drive in it. So they've created this whole neat little all-in-one network appliance where you plug it in, you get your network, you get your shared internet, you get your wireless, and you get your network backup storage.
I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy. I have my LaCie drive that I got from you that backs up my network. Plus, I back everything up every night to one of my machines on the internet. So
it's an off-site backup.
So I have off-site backup. If something disastrous happens to my home, I've still got my data.
Well, that's where I recommend, and I've told folks before, to get everything, you know, as far as the documents, the songs, and everything else. If you're running Windows XP and even in Vista, you can still do the file and transfer program. And what you do there is you just create a folder out on your hard drive, say you call it data transfer. And you start the file transfer program. You say it's the old program, the old computer. You then tell it to, grab everything, and then put it into that folder that you created. And it literally will pack up all your songs, all your photos, all your emails, and all your desktop settings, and everything. So if something happens, you know, your machine crashes, you can then get Windows reloaded and then put this file back, and it will restore all your emails, all your documents, and everything else. Well, this is a nice compact folder that you can then, again, to an external storage, whether it's DVD, USB hard drives, flash drives. You got to get a good size one. Usually, this thing is, depending on your email, you know, a few gig big. But periodically, back that up, and you've literally got everything that you would need to get you back up and running, especially your emails and your bookmarks and some of the documents.
Right. There are also several companies who make Gmail file system extensions. So I know there's one called MacFuse, and there's a couple under Linux and some under Windows that let you mount your Google Mail as a file system. So you've got, 7 gigabytes of Google Mail available right now? There's a 7 gigabyte hard drive to which you can save data.
I've been led to believe from reading about this that Google frowns upon that, and if they catch you doing it, they will restrict your account in some way. Whether or not that's true, I don't know.
I don't know.
It may be obsolete information because it's published in a book that I reviewed recently.
Right.
But go for it if it works.
Exactly.
Yeah, just think of the bandwidth necessary to keep that directory open all the time for how many millions of people using Google.
Well, Google won't notice that, but you will with your 5 gigabyte, 5 gigabyte bandwidth limit. Cap.
But that's what I was going to say. With the cap, if that goes through, there goes, I'm going to waste time uploading and downloading it?
Well, I think people are just going to leave in droves. They're going to have the low end, you know, all the people who don't look at email twice a week. That's what's going to be left.
Like I say, my biggest complaint is, if they're going to put that type of cap, going back to this program issue that we've beaten to death quite a bit already, but I still contend that if they're going to sit there and limit me to the 5 gig, then they better do a better job of sorting out all this spam and crud that I get through countless times.
Right.
And all the ads that I get on every website I go to.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I'm not paying for that junk to use up my limited 5 gig a month.
Right.
There's going to be a big uproar there.
Yeah, there is. All right, I got to talk about this. Today, it is September 7th, 2008. Today is the day that Spore hits the stores. You're desperately waiting, aren't you?
Alex is nodding her head. She's running around the counter. She wants to say something.
No, but my fiance ordered it last night, and apparently it doesn't unlock until 1:30 today. So you can get all the files downloaded, but they won't decrypt until 1:30. And
right.
I know when I come home tonight, I don't know if I can actually talk to him until maybe midnight. So he's been really excited about this because they've been talking about this for 4 years. And I know it started out as a research project with getting little, just really, really small bits of data going on the network back and forth. And I'm interested to see. I'm going to let him play first, and then I'll stick with the creature creator until it goes on.
You're going to love it. I've been playing with it for almost a week now. And I Look, I'm not a game player, okay? I die every time I play Doom in God mode. The only...
That's pretty hard to do, folks.
Right, right, right. When I'm in Halo, I'm deadly in a warthog to my own teammates, okay? I suck at video games. I love Spore. I love Spore. I'm actually, people gather around me and laugh, not at me, but with me as we do things. This is how you people feel all the time. This is great. I love the game. Basically, the game allows you to direct life and the development of an organism from the cell stage, the one-celled little flagella organism that you've got, all the way to exploration and dominance of the galaxy. Spore is essentially five games, actually, broken up into stages. There's that little cell game is an action arcade game. There's a role-playing game, which is basically the creature phase. The tribal phase is a squad command game. Then there's a real-time strategy game in the civilization phase. And then there's drawing all those elements together and adding in vastness in the outer space phase.
Now, I'm wondering if she's going to have to get her own computer to get time with her fiancé to go against him and not beat him too bad.
Well, that's the tough part. You're going to have to, you know, tone your stuff down to match him. But
I don't know. He might share, and he might let me try it. So he wants to get me to try. He's going to let me watch and play, and then he'll probably have to drag me off the computer.
You will be hooked. This is a great game. Basically, at its core, Spore is less about being a game than about expressing your individuality and your own creativity. The level of customization is just staggering, from those little creatures' looks to the buildings in the city to the look of the spaceship to everything that you do. It's astonishing. And of course, they've already released the Spore creature creator, so millions of people have created characters that they're just waiting to upload, to hand off to people.
Yep, I have a creature out there. I named him Buster.
There you go. And even the developers didn't imagine the level of interest that that Spore was going to create. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Mythbusters, show on, they had the crash test dummy, they named him Buster.
Exactly.
They made themselves.
No, I think it's mostly because he kind of looks like a bug, and I gave him a little spike in the back, so he reminds me of Buster Bunny, or reminds me of a rabbit.
Yeah. There you go. Spore is just way too much fun. It launches today. It runs both on Windows and on Mac OS 10.5.3 or later.
Hooray!
Yeah.
So I think Alex is probably going to be ordering in pizza.
Yeah, exactly. We're eating in tonight again, honey.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing's changed.
Yeah. $50 for the regular version, $80 for the Galactic Edition. Comes with a bunch of extras. Spore Origins is already out for the iPod. EA Studios, EA Games said on Friday it plans a Spore Origins version for the iPhone and the iPod Touch later this month. So if you have not yet had the chance to play with Spore, run. Run now, because you will be sucked in. It's a black hole. It's a vortex of so much fun. It just sucks you in, and you never want to
leave. They can download this from the internet if they want?
No, you buy it. It's a box game. It's a regular game.
Well, that's what I mean. But if you pay, can you download? If folks, you know, can't find a store around here, because stores around here are far.
Oh, everybody's got it. It's at Walmart. It's at. Oh, really? It's everywhere.
Oh, okay.
It's everywhere. There's probably guys
on the corner
at the stoplights.
Yeah, you can download it, though.
Yeah.
If you can't get to a store, you can download it. You can download the files, but again, it's going to be encrypted until 1:30 p.m. this afternoon.
Right. Right, and
the creature creator is free to download and play with and make your own creatures.
You make all the creatures you want.
And that's been fun for the few weeks it's been available already.
Actually, since June.
A few months. That's been fun for the few months it's been available.
Yeah. There you go.
See, I am so afraid of getting hooked on a game because I have no time for anything else.
You are an addictive personality, and you're done already. You're done. 7,000 hours of podcasts a week? Where the hell do you even put all of those?
Yeah, really?
And at some point, don't you have to sit down? You know, you've got that whole favorites and last listened to and stuff. Why don't you pay attention to that in iTunes? And you look at it and you think, I have never listened to a single episode of X. Why don't I just not download X? And then do that again tomorrow and then the day after.
iTunes does that for you. If you don't listen to a podcast, it stops downloading it. And that annoys me because I may want to listen to it sometime.
I have an answer to your question, Nick. The reason nothing gets erased is because he still has storage space available.
Yes.
That's all there is to it.
Although, I did find out when my hard drive was full, there was like 10 gigs free. Remember when 10 gigs was a lot?
Yeah.
Now I'm annoyed there's only 10 gigs free.
I I only have 16 gig free on this, and it's annoying me.
I found I had 100 gigs in the trash.
Oh, thank heaven.
Because I had been throwing some stuff away, but I don't empty my trash just in case I need it back.
You're sicker than many of our listeners. I would not have thought that possible. Something? Nothing. All right. You got another...
Well, you had a Linux one.
Oh, yeah, I got a Linux question.
And then I got another one here, too.
This is Al from Rochester. Says, what happens when you ask a software pirate for Ubuntu? Ubuntu, of course, is absolutely free of charge. You can make as many copies as you want and give them to as many people as possible.
But so I think, scan it first.
Well, exactly. What you're probably getting is a hacked version of Windows that's going to load your machine up with a bunch of junk. So download your own copy of Ubuntu and go. It's a... That's very funny, Al. That's very funny.
Okay.
Probably their head would explode.
Yeah. All right, I got another one here from Kevin from Mumford. And this is kind of going back to the other question. Wanted to know, what do you think of a registry cleaner, specifically RegCure? RegCure is a good one. You know, if you've been adding and removing programs, I would recommend running a RegCleaner once. Because after that, once you download and install Revo, you won't need a RegCleaner. Because Revo will do that each time for you. And with these reg cleaners, they do a pretty good job. But I'm still leery on recommending a lot of these because some folks go into killer mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's
like people with their defraggers.
Die. And they go in there and they just wipe out everything. And then they go to reboot and this program accidentally... You know, because you said, yeah, and didn't pay attention to it. Oh, if you delete this, it might cause your system not to boot. But you went, yeah. Gone. Rebooted, and now the system doesn't boot.
Which you like.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, right.
We crave for those things. But, no, folks, you know, RegCure is a good one to run one time, but do it in a very cautious mode. Be careful what you're doing. Take your time and read the screens.
And if you don't fully understand, say no.
Back out.
First
back
read, out. Then click.
You got it.
Maybe.
Read twice, click once.
Yes.
Good idea. I like that.
That's how that works.
Folks just get... They're so used to it. Just yeah. Because we're so, you know, instant gratification now.
Yeah.
I mean, I still kick people... Because they'll sit there and say, the internet's really slow. Wait a minute, folks. Think back 10, 15 years ago. We were still on dial-up.
Yeah, we had 28K modems, and we downloaded a 100K file, and it took an hour. Now we have 10 megabit Roadrunner, and we download a 100 megabyte file, and it takes an hour.
Right. Well, I told you before, I was very upset when I bought a 2400 baud modem. It was no longer slow enough that I could read the screen as it was scrolling by. Actually, right. I had to rewrite my little terminal program in Forth now to save to a buffer. Because before, I could, at 300 baud and at 1200 baud, I could read as it scrolled. But at 2400 baud, it was just a little too fast. So I had to rewrite the entire app to save to the hard drive so I could read it later. That really porked me off.
And we did everything through like FidoNet, and everything was just text. I mean, you take just some of the newer folks right now.
Even then, we had offline readers. I remember I can't remember the name of it now.
Blue Wave.
That annoys
me. Blue Wave, yes. Go up, get your
offline
email
reader
download.
I ran a BBS. Frog Pond BBS. Thank you. My brain
so
just
long ago.
Shut down.
What's the FidoNet editor I used?
And,
remember Kermit?
And we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of users on our bulletin board system. All of them used Blue Wave. And so they would get online for a minute and a half, download their mail, and hang up.
Or upload your current replies.
And it would upload your current replies. And then you would answer everything and hit and dial in again and upload it. We had, and at that, my machine was busy 24/7. I added a second line so more people could do that. We had many, many, many hundreds of people on that bulletin board system.
I feel so out of the times. My parents just went from dial-up to Roadrunner this past summer.
See? And they think the internet is fast now.
My mother loves it. She didn't realize how slow it was. And I'd get back from college and be like, it takes 2 minutes to download a web page.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. That and we had a Windows 98.
Oh, gateway. My heavens.
Ooh.
So it just got tossed in the trash or recycled in 2008, so 10 years old. A little outdated.
Yeah. But they got their money's worth out of it.
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. And it's seen a couple printers since then. So
you'll be buying them the $100 laptop when it's available.
Maybe.
I was speaking with a customer this week whose mother just went from dial-up to Fios.
Oh, I hate her.
And we all hate her.
Oh, my golly.
So from 56K to 20 meg.
I want my Fios. Verizon, if you're listening, get me Fios now. Oh, we should announce this. Sony announced yesterday, actually, that it will recall around 438,000 VAIO notebook computers affected by a potential hazard that is likely to cause them to overheat or even burn the user. This was one of the biggest computer recalls since 2006, when Dell recalled 4.1 million notebook computer batteries, which incidentally overheated and caused fires and incidentally were from Sony. According to a Sony spokes individual, there are currently around 72,800 computers in the United States alone awaiting recall. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission said that Sony has received 15 reports of overheating and one of a customer suffering minor burns. The laptops in question are, listen carefully, write this down. You're listening on a podcast, so you can pause. VGN TZ100, VGN TZ200, VGN TZ300, and VGN TZ2000 series. And the problem is related to, and I quote, irregularly positioned wires near the computer's hinge and or a dislodged screw inside the hinge. Ouch.
Well, yeah. And like I say, if you don't think this can really happen, folks, if you go to my webpage, we have pictures of a laptop because the client refused to take the time and do the battery recall. It literally started a fire in his home.
Yep.
And you can see there the remnants of the laptop, and it also burnt the desk. Now, normally this wouldn't be an issue. You know, you could quick go over and put the fire out. This gentleman, though, had to decide which end of the house that he wanted to go to, whether the house where the fire was or who his wife, who was on oxygen, and to get her out safely.
Yeah, yeah. You got to be careful. I had a friend who was in a hotel room. He had his laptop with him, went in, took a shower. When he came out, the laptop had been burned up.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is just totally toast. Flames coming up from it and everything else.
Yep.
In a former life, I worked with a great deal of military equipment, and we also had some defective batteries come in from our supplier. And I wasn't there at the time, but I saw the aftermath of some military equipment. And you know how rugged that's built.
Yep.
It had literally been blown apart by an exploding lithium battery. So anybody that's affected by one of these recalls, get your thing back to the manufacturer.
Take the time and do it.
You know, people talk about, oh my God, fuel cells, they sound dangerous, they sound bad. You have a small munitions device powering your laptop at this moment.
And that's why they're not allowed on aircraft.
Exactly.
And you're driving around with 20 gallons of highly combustible fuel in the back of your car.
We don't think about that stuff, right? Oh, wonder, we're going to put hydrogen in my car? What happens if it explodes? Less than what happens if your gas tank gets punctured.
Remember the Ford Pinto.
Yes. Yeah. Sony says this poses a burn hazard to consumers. They've initiated, you know, God bless them for this, they've initiated a voluntary program to perform a free inspection and, if necessary, a repair. Of course, let us not forget that in the year 2006, Dell, Apple, Lenovo, Toshiba, and some other PC makers recalled more than 8 million Sony batteries. Sony has declined to comment on what this will cost them.
Wisely.
Well, that 2006 one was like a $300 million charge, some ridiculous amount of money for all those batteries.
Yeah, I actually had my battery recalled in 2006. It was very, very warm. I was noticing that it was just very hard to keep my laptop ventilated, right? And the battery got really hot. So it's like this went on for a couple months. You know, I turned off when it got too hot, but then I heard about the recall, so free shipping, just send in my old battery and got the new one in.
Yeah, it's...
And it runs smooth, cooler now, doesn't it?
Used to.
Yeah, well, right.
Oh, it's, wow. It's running very cold right now.
Dead cold.
Exactly.
Oh. Yeah, no, like I say, can't stress enough, folks, you know, They will. And if, like I say, if you have any doubts, you look at my webpage, and I've actually got live or real pictures, not live, real pictures of a laptop that did burn up because of this battery recall. So it's not something to take lightly and, you know, fool around with. It can cause damage, and I'd hate to see any of our listeners, you know, not take the time, and especially since they'll pay for all the shipping and everything else.
Right. I got to get this one last thing in.
Yeah, go.
For those of you who have actually, I know none of you read the end user license agreements, but I actually read the one in Chrome. And
before they changed it,
the one that I initially downloaded, and I installed it anyway because I wasn't going to actually use it for anything, said this: you retain copyright and any other rights you already hold in content that you submit, post, or display on or through the services. By submitting, posting, or displaying the content, you give Google a perpetual, irrevocable, worldwide, royalty-free, and non-exclusive license to reproduce, adapt, modify, translate, publish, publicly perform, publicly display, and distribute any content that you submit, post, or display on or through the services. This license is for the sole purpose of enabling Google to display, distribute, and promote the services, and may be revoked for certain services as defined in the additional terms of their of those services. Well, that raised a little bit of a storm.
What does that mean in the vernacular, Nick?
What that means is you upload anything, look at anything, distribute anything, they own it. So, in other words, they can do whatever they want with the content you post through their browser. Right, like anybody's going to agree to that. Any of the people who actually would have in any way read the end user license agreement.
Now, who thought that was a good idea in the first place to put it in there?
Very clearly it was a cut and paste from things from a couple of their other things. Somebody just, you know, cut and paste, search and replace something with Chrome, and they were done.
Adobe ran into the same problem with their, the Photoshop Elements web creation, whatever it is, where you can upload your photos and edit them in a web browser. The first license was the same way. Anything you upload, we can do whatever we want with.
Right. By 2 o'clock on Wednesday, Section 11 had dramatically changed. The new version now says, you retain copyright and any other rights you already hold in content which you submit, post, or display on or through the services. Done.
Oh, jeez. There you go.
If you own it, you own it. We don't. Thank you. Good night. Well, we'll wait and see if that creeps back in some way. But it was clearly somebody just cutting, pasting, search and replace for stuff. Agreement. You know, that was all they cared about, and they were done. But it was pretty funny because the initial beta testers, the people who are going to run a 0.2 beta, are actually going to read the end user license agreement. Because they're the people who are going to go back to Google and say, you know, you misspelled this, or this is wrong, or what did you mean by that? Because they're beta they're real beta testers. They don't miss a trick. And we read that, and I looked at it and I thought, oh, that'll change. I knew that was not going to fly, so I said okay and moved on, and it's changed now. But it was really pretty funny.
Speaking of user licenses, I thought I had wanted to watch some of the Olympics on the Internet, and that requires the downloading of, what was it, Silverlight?
Yes.
The new media forum for from Windows, from Microsoft.
Right.
Right. So I read the license agreement, and it essentially said, once you download and start using the software, we have the right to put anything on your computer that we see fit at any time. And I said, no, I don't think so. I own this computer. I'll decide what's on it. And I didn't watch any of the Olympics.
I did watch the Olympics and then removed it from my computer. Actually, I wiped the hard drive.
Well, and that's how a lot of spyware gets into your computers already, because it's in the license that, and you agree to it, because we're all click happy by saying agree, agree, agree.
Nobody reads the licenses anymore. Nobody does.
See, that's why I'm not a fan, and so many folks don't take the time. They put in either the Yahoo toolbars or the Google toolbar. Google right now, they're having some issues right there with their toolbar, and that it's been hacked a few times, that it's really messing things up for Internet Explorer to even run. So I'm just not a big fan of those.
Yeah. We've,
Well, one last announcement. If you're listening to this before the meeting.
Yeah, right.
on Wednesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. at East High School, author Adam Engst will be speaking at the Apple Cider Users Group meeting. Adam Engst is the publisher of Tidbits, which is the oldest, longest-running electronic newsletter on the Internet, almost predating the Internet as we know it today. He also publishes the Take Control series of electronic books, very short books on specific topics, so really, really good detail on them. He's written numerous books. He's a contributing editor at Mac User, Mac Week, and now Mac World. So he's been around for a very long time and writing all sorts of books on iLife and computers and whatnot. And so, again, he'll be speaking Wednesday, September 10th at 7 p.m. at East High School, which is at the corner of Main and Culver, in the Forum Room at the Apple Cider Users Group meeting. And you can get more information at www.applecider.org.
And we should the Ohio Street entrance
under the radio tower gets you to the Forum Room quick.
Right. We should mention that it is birthday month.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's first?
Soundbites itself is first.
Yeah. Oh, Soundbites itself is first. Yeah.
And then me.
Then I'm the 19th.
I'm the 20th.
I'm the 20th. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the 10th. So it's Soundbites, me, you, you. It's
how old is Soundbites?
Coming up 19 years.
Holy moly.
Yeah, you aren't kidding, buddy boy. 19 years and 4 days as of today.
Yeah, we started heading towards our 20th year.
Third or the fourth or whatever. So, yeah, we're heading toward our 20th year. We're going to have some hopefully very exciting announcements for our 20th anniversary, but that's a year away, so we'll hold off on some of those. But this has been a bit of an experiment for all of us. In particular, Alex, who's been staring at that board, waiting for something to blow up. It looks like
no phones to answer.
No phones to answer. It's been a. That just made Alex very happy. She loves
just
that
gave
part.
The, oh yeah,
oh
gesture.
Yeah. We're during the during those weeks that the Buffalo Bills are doing 1 o'clock games, we will be strictly podcast. So we're actually doing this. We're at netcast. We're doing this earlier than you will hear it over the net. And then, of course, we will be podcasting it through the gracious services of the great Chris Reich, who spends way too much time and of his prodigious talent.
I believe it's going to be on the web from 1 to 2.
It's going to be webcast
on the wham1180.com web stream from 1 to 2.
Right. So you won't know that, of course, unless you actually knew that ahead of time.
Right.
But next week and every week on which there's a 1 o'clock Bills game. So
when in doubt, check the Soundbites forums because we've got the dates posted there where we're going to be after the show. Because once we finish up here, we move down to another studio and we will be in Second Life until 1 o'clock.
Right. So when we leave the studio, we'll go over there and set up and then start out. I think there are people already in Second Life. I've been looking at the roster of people, and there's more and more of them coming in. They're clearly waiting for us to show up. There's 13 people in there now. So,
and don't we have a new feature starting next week, Nick?
Yes, we do. Starting next week, we will have Chris Reich talking about shareware and
freeware software,
and he'll be giving us the lowdown on all that good stuff. Well, that seems to put us at the end of our first netcast only edition of Soundbites. It's been an interesting time for all of us. It clearly we can fill an hour just with the sound of our own voices. I want to thank
and Alex's
and of course Alex. I said hour, all four of all five of us. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Alex Vanderweel. I'm Nick Francesco. You have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the net and on 1180 WHAM. How close did I get to exactly?
I have 1 hour and 1 second on my clock.
Wow.
Can't get any tighter than that.
For a guy who can't see a clock, I'm not doing bad.
What's Alex got?
I think I got it at 59.
Interestingly enough, I can tell Audacity, make this sound file this long and it'll adjust.
Yeah. Is that not cool?
It is.
Good one, young lady.
Save button in this
brilliantly program. Done. Thank you.
Ding.